From Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, October 14th, 2014. This weekly podcast gives you an inside edge on technology news related to all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Dina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
When is an address obsolete and insufficient to describe a location, especially in time of an emergency incident? When the location of a fire or flood, for example, is not along a street or can't be easily referenced. And if you don't have a particular local knowledge of, say, the field that has the old tractor across from the abandoned gas station, then your high-powered geocoder is unlikely to know what you're talking about. We'll tackle the madness of addressing after this message from our sponsor.
Directions Magazine is the leader in geospatial technology webinars. If your organization is interested in more sales leads, stronger brand awareness, and positioning your company as a key thought leader, then let us help you deliver a professionally produced live event that reaches a global audience. For more information on both our 30 and 60-minute webinar formats, go to www.geospatialwebinars.com.
Dina, last week we published an article entitled The Madness of Addressing. It was written by Carbon County, Utah GIS manager Benjamin Clement, who lives in the lovely town of Price, Utah, a town I visited on more than one occasion when I was working as a geologist. He posed a simple question: are street addresses obsolete? And he told this story, if you'll indulge me for a few minutes. He says, a few weeks back, we had a flooding event here in Carbon County, Utah. A hotline was established, and folks started calling in for help to report damage. My GIS department was tasked with the usual chore of mapping the locations of all the calls to help coordinate the response. And folks called in with a name, phone number, address, and description of the damage. While most of the time our mapping duties went smoothly, we had the usual difficulties we all face in situations when an address is the primary location information, which he described as misspellings of street addresses. In other words, human error as people were collecting the data. Then there were descriptions of the locations and potential damage that at first seemed simple, but turned out later to be more difficult to locate. For example, golf course, where there was X number of dollars of damage, then tie that address to the clubhouse. A power company has an address point at the plant up the canyon, or the railroad tied to the train station location in town. And he goes on to cite other examples where an address is just not adequate. And he poses the question, what's an address? Which he answers, well, I might not be able to answer that for everyone in every situation. I can give a general answer. An address is simply an abstraction of a location. So if addresses are such a problem, why have we not done something about it already? There's a tremendous mass of public knowledge tied up in addressing, and as all masses do, it has an equally tremendous inertial resistance to change. So Mr. Clement's problem generated quite a bit of discussion on our comments section, and people chimed in here in the U.S. as well as internationally, and it almost seemed to zone in on the man-machine interface where local knowledge and computer recognition sometimes seems at odds and sometimes complementary. What do you think got people so fired up about this? Why is this a sensitive issue?
Well, I think with our reader base and listener base, he's spot on. We've all been there.
Yeah.
We have absolutely been there where addresses are not good enough. And if we want to extend this to non-GIS people, they've all had the experience where you type in 15 Central Street, and when you follow directions on Google Maps or whatever, it's two blocks wrong one way or the other, or it's on the wrong side of the street, right? So we all know that there's a problem. The biggest challenge, and he points this out, is why haven't we figured this out yet?
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to do better.
What he described as a potential solution is essentially using latitude, longitude, and a lot of people picked up on this, and I want to add a comment here by Ed Wells. And for those who don't know Ed, he is a GISP, the manager of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. He's also the ERISA's Horward recipient, essentially Mr. Addressing for ERISA. And he suggested one of four, or using all of the four different types of potential referencing schemes, including linear referencing. And the one interesting thing he pointed out was, he goes, sometimes names are the best that you have. And he mentioned the golf course. He says, might not be specific enough for a first responder, but the fort, but using, in other words, they're saying golf course, but he's saying the 14th hole on the golf course may be something more accurate. So again, a local description. Although if you've played golf, you know that the 14th hole isn't always in the same place in every golf course. But it was very true, you know, that if you're talking to somebody, you have a better sense if they give you something descriptive, like the 14th hole. I thought that was an interesting way to characterize it. He also mentioned linear referencing systems, which if you're not familiar with a linear referencing system, I'm not sure that it adds much value. If you're not into railroads, you're not into pipelines, knowing that it's at milepost 41 or 42 isn't going to help you very much. So I guess what he's saying is that the madness comes in the myriad of geocoding services that are available to us. What do you think are some of the possible solutions we could arrive at here if we're not satisfied with the current addressing schemes?
Well, I think Ed really has it right, and that's that somehow we've got to use all of the techniques available to us, and somehow we need to have them all be accessible together. So depending on the situation, you might want to use, if there was just a tornado and all of your local landmarks got moved, the trees and the houses all got picked up and moved away, then latitude and longitude may be the only thing you have that's going to work. Mm-hmm. Alternatively, if there's a big pileup on the highway, linear referencing system is going to make the most sense for those who are responding. They can figure out which exit they have to get the ambulances to get the people out of there. So it's really on a situation-by-situation basis. And the real trick, I think, you know, if we spin forward into the future when we have this all figured out, it's going to be some system where a location may have representations in one or all four of those different systems that he details. Now, having a giant database with all that information in it, you know, sounds lovely, but then if we turn this international, which of course we have to do now because not only are fire companies called across county lines and across state lines to help out when there's a fire, but now we've got people going literally from here in Boston to Liberia to help out with Ebola.
Right.
So they have to understand the addressing system, or in Liberia, a lot of times there is no addressing system. How are we even going to find the people's houses who we want to go check on?
Yeah, it's an interesting problem, and not just for critical situations like Liberia, but if you're traveling internationally and you get stuck or lost or a car breaks down, I'm not sure I would know what to do other than I'd probably whip out Google Maps or Apple Maps and try to give somebody the best description of where I was. But I'm not as familiar with every single addressing scheme in every different country. Me traveling and having an emergency situation, I wouldn't know what exactly to do other than, okay, if my map is available. I think it presents an extreme challenge for emergency responders.
And what you just said really highlights the friction here. And that's, if you're in the middle of nowhere and there's nobody around and all you have is your phone, well, yes, use that to the best of your ability. But if you're in a place with locals, they know the local geography. They know where the hospital is, for
right.
example. Right? They know where the police department is, or they know where you can catch a cab. Right? That's all that local knowledge. And every time you try to change or enhance addressing systems, you come right up against that local knowledge and the local understanding of what those addresses mean. And they have meaning. They have very deep meaning in certain situations. So anytime you want to change it, and we've had several articles about a number of different systems that basically want to divide up the entire world into these grids, and then each of the grids can be represented by either 8 digits or 3 words,
right.
or but the idea is the same, they're implemented differently. But anytime you try to take something that has meaning to people and represent it in this numbers and letters gobbledygook that means nothing, people get a little freaked out. I was running over the weekend with some friends, and we were running down Everett Avenue. And for whatever reason, this was like mile 16 of the run, so maybe we were just tired and bored. I said, hey, on our podcast, we're going to talk about addressing. And I said, so we're running down Everett Avenue. What does that mean? And they said, oh, well, it's one of the prettiest streets in town and blah, blah, blah. And that's all true. But if it was 374-8947,
You wouldn't have a clue what that meant.
Now, over time, maybe that would have meaning. Kind of like area codes do now. It was a big deal here in Boston when they split up the 617 area code and people didn't want 978 or 781 because 617 was a really important one. So things do have meaning. The numbers do have meaning. But I think names do, and I think addresses do.
But you eventually got used to the change.
Okay, so how come, and we've got, there's probably a dozen companies offering some form of these gridded solutions.
Yeah.
While some have been implemented in some countries, often countries that didn't have any addressing to begin with, there is nothing international. In fact, reading up for this, the efforts at having standardized international addresses have pretty much disbanded. So if it's so easy, why are we doing it?
Yeah. That's a really hard question to ask. Yeah.
And I think it goes, and I think he used exactly the correct word in the article, and that's inertia.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, getting everybody together to agree on anything worldwide, we know, is really a challenge. Now, I wonder if something like this Ebola outbreak is going to help push forward that whole idea of we need decent mapping, we need decent addressing, exactly because we're all in this together and we're going to be moving from country to country to help each other out. Will that sort of reignite interest in standardized addressing within a city, within a county, within a state, within a country, and then potentially, you know, worldwide?
Yeah, but it has all been on an as-needed basis. The earthquake in Haiti kind of jump-started OpenStreetMap, for example. You needed to get down there. You needed to find out
Katrina,
people.
Katrina, they didn't know the addresses of the houses.
Yeah.
Right? Everything got, all the landmarks went away. All the streets went away.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And as your example, when a tornado blows through, you only have a lat long because not just the houses are blown away, but the street signs are blown away. There's no referencing landmarks, as Clement described. You know, it's easy when you know the landmarks. When all the landmarks are gone, and the grid system is gone, and there's trash piled up in the middle of the street, so you can't even see the streets. How do you know? How do you know where you are? It's only a lat long.
And if you've ever gone geocaching, which is basically a lat long that you're looking for,
right?
That's hard.
Yeah, and I think it brings up another interesting thing, which is of course down the road, but I think it was mentioned in the article, was what happens when you start networking all the everything, the Internet of Things, and then take that a step further, what happens when there becomes driverless cars? What is the referencing system that you put inside a vehicle that will allow them to come to a very accurate location? It's almost going to have to be everything. All of the systems that Ed Wells had, and perhaps more, is how you direct a vehicle to a particular location, and particularly to know that if that location is indeed navigable, right? If there's actual a street that you can drive down. So I think it presents a number of challenges even beyond the schemes that we currently know and the striving to have a standard or a standard system for addressing. It's gonna come down to the technology that we're thinking about now, for example, for the driverless cars.
Well, and I'm going to go one step further. Drone delivery.
Oh, excellent.
Whether it's going to happen in 5 years or 15 years, whatever. Again, we come down to that same problem that Benjamin had in the article.
Yep.
And that's, I don't just need the address of the house, but I need the specific address of the porch where I want the package to be delivered.
So then does every drone carry a global database of imagery to make sure that that location is accurate? I mean, do you have to have a picture of everybody's house, privacy issues notwithstanding, so that you know that that drone will go to the exact location?
Well, there's a good question. Is it imagery? Is it just a really good linear referencing system that's better than the one we've got that maybe incorporates some of these grids? Even a property grid, so you know where on the porch to put it or whatever.
Yeah.
Or more than likely, that stays up in the cloud somewhere and the drone, you know, queries back and forth.
Yeah. And just as a quick aside, that's really not off the topic, I know that my house number, within easily one block, my house number is repeated. Different streets, but I will often get mail from my neighbor who's around the block. And he's not just the only 2505 address. There's another one up the street too. So there's like three houses within a block with the same number. And, you know, if you didn't know the picture of my house, or if you didn't have the mailman to say, oh, no, Francisca is not located on this street. He's located on that street. Right.
It's that local knowledge. And I have the same problem here. My street's called Tower. We also have Tower Court. We always get Tower Court mail. Our postmen are quite good. The problem is they change a lot. So they have to learn the local knowledge, right?
I think that brings us back to our initial question, which is there one type of addressing scheme that would be appropriate? And I'm not sure that that's a good answer. But Clement brought up, I think, an age-old problem, if nothing else.
And I guess the final point that I will make is that it sounds like, even though governments and emergency response issues and medical issues haven't pushed this far enough to get us to really thinking about this universally, what will get us there is commerce. Hmm. And it really is, I think, drone delivery and self-driving cars that are going to push this to the next level.
Well, we'll leave it there. That's all the time we have for today. And from us here at Directions Magazine, please check out our webinars that are coming up on October 14th. That will be Instant Enterprise from ROK, learn how to leverage ArcGIS platform in the cloud with your data. And on October 15th, HERE presents Mobile SDKs for Business. You can check out all of our webinars at directionsmag.com/webinars. If you'd like to leave a comment about today's podcast, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com. Leave a comment in the comments box where this podcast is posted, or send us a tweet @directionsmag. Thanks again for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.